You're listening
to Welcome to Comics,
episode number 295. This week, we talk about Wonder Woman, the movie. Visit WelcomeToComics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
Planet Hulk Build-A-Figure.
Oh, yeah.
That thing is sick as hell. I don't know how I'm not going to buy one.
Well, I mean, the Hela figure is awesome.
Yeah. The Hela is good. The Thors are good, too. The Loki is good.
The face sculpts look really good.
Yeah. The Marvel Legends have been really, really awesome the last couple of years. I just ordered the Rocket and Groot, the Nebula, and the Gamora to finish out my Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nice.
The only one I won't have is Mantis, because she's the Build-A-Figure, and, like, her head alone is, like, $10. Her arms are, like, $6 each. And I'm like, I already spent $60 on action figures for this wave.
What figures does she come with?
She comes with Nebula, Star-Lord.
Are you buying the figures loose?
Well, no, I bought Gamora and Nebula from Target. And then I bought Rocket. I bought Rocket and Groot from eBay, but they came with the torso.
Mm-hmm.
But the Star-Lord I have from the previous wave, because they just did a Star-Lord wave. So they did Star-Lord with Drax, like that wave, but that Star-Lord was the pre-Planet Ego Star-Lord. So it's him and like just a jacket and his normal helmet. And then the one that's shipping with this wave is post-Ego. So he's got like the longer coat and like the scarf thing that he gives himself when he gets Ego powers.
Yeah.
So, like, I already had one. I don't need another one. I think that's the one that comes with the head, or one of the arms. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Death's head is one of the arms. And then there's another one that I don't really care about. I don't.
I see.
Yeah. But if you buy that Star-Lord, I will buy the head off you. The Mantis.
I don't plan on buying it, sorry.
Damn. It's pretty good.
You know what I am saving my pennies for, though?
What?
Do you know what comes out on July 26th?
I feel like I should.
So what comes out on July 26th is the DC Collectibles Booster and Beetle 2-pack.
Yeah! I've got Amazon set to alert me when it goes on sale.
I like that Booster comes with two faces.
Of course. They both should come with two different faces.
Ted doesn't. At least it doesn't look like it. And it also comes with the Skeets.
Yeah. You can't do it without Skeets. I mean, I guess you could, because he's been without Skeets a couple times. But it's always been
But they
like,
both come with... They come with a few different hands, and, like, Booster has the Legion Flight ring on his hand.
As he ought to.
One of the hands that Ted comes with, he's holding, like, a drink. Like a cocktail of some kind.
Oh, yeah, here it is. $33. Yeah.
Wait, how much?
They both have a cocktail. Oh, sorry, it was 33. Now it's 50.
Yeah.
And they have Lay's. They come with Lay's, yeah. And both of them have a hand with a drink in it. And okay, so Booster comes with Scoots, but Blue Beetle comes with a wad of cash.
Yeah, but it's a $2. It looks like $2 bills.
Oh, is it? I can't see in this preview, but I love it. I love it. I still need to get a good Wonder Woman movie statuette or action figure. I'm debating between the Mafex and the Mezco. I want the Mafex one because it has the battle face. Like her, like, screaming, hitting somebody.
That's
snarling,
cool.
Like a screaming snarl kind of a thing. It's great. So, you want to talk about this movie?
Yeah.
We're just going to spend this episode talking about the Wonder Woman movie. It's been out for 3 weeks now, and it set a shit ton of records for, like, long tail movies, like movies that, you know, most movies I think nowadays get a big opening weekend, and then after that, people are like, I'll just watch it on Netflix. But either people are going back to see Wonder Woman, or Wonder Woman's like second wave of viewers is really strong. Something about this movie that seems to have a lot of staying power in theaters, and it's just continuing to make a ton of money, which is awesome, because the big thing going into this is like, oh, movies, especially action movies with female leads, never succeed. They just don't. That's been like the thing that they've always said. And those movies, by and large, I think are because they sucked. Like, Lucy wasn't a good movie. I'm just thinking Scarlett Johansson movies. I was going to say Ghost in the Shell, but it's also Scarlett Johansson. But there was one, Angelina Jolie, like the Tomb Raider ones did okay. Salt was good, but I don't think got the reception they wanted it to. Most of the way I'm thinking about these, it's because they're just mediocre, subpar movies for the most part. I mean, they're not bad, not all of them, but they're not great. And I feel like Wonder Woman is just a good movie. I feel like it's better than the rest of the DC lineup so far.
Well, I think the thing is, I mean, there hasn't been a female-led superhero movie from DC or Marvel before.
Yeah, superhero, yeah.
Before Wonder Woman. I mean, things like Catwoman and Elektra, those don't count, because they were just... I mean, they were characters that people weren't really interested in, and they were just bad. But this movie, I mean, I think maybe the reason it has staying power is because there were people who were going to see it anyway. These are the people who tend to, you know, these are the comic book fans and the comic book and the superhero movie fans,
mm-hmm.
who are going to see it no matter what kind of reviews it got. And so they all went out and saw it, and that's probably why it had a great opening weekend. But because it got great reviews, critically, it's the best. It's by far the best DC Cinematic Universe movie. It has people that maybe weren't going to rush out to see it. They were going to wait for the reviews, and they're going to go see it like in the following weeks afterwards. And I bet there are people who have gone and watched it a second time. I wouldn't mind watching it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to watch it again either. There's a lot of stuff in here that I feel like details that I should go back and rewatch.
Mm-hmm. And I think just the movie was like really well put together, you know? Like,
yeah.
The cast was really good. The acting was really good.
Yeah, man, Gal Gadot was so good.
The pacing was good. Like the movie just fired on all cylinders. Like, everything just came together and worked really well.
Yeah, Gal Gadot, I mean, like, I remember when she was first cast, I, like, had never heard of her before, and then you see the first teasers of the costume were, like, kind of browned out, like the rest of the gritty Zack Snyder DC-verse was, and I was like, oh, no, this is going to be terrible, but I think she really carried this movie. This could have gone either way, a lot of instances, but she did a really fantastic job of playing the naive Diana when she had to,
mm-hmm.
but then also bearing down and being complex at the same time. Like, it's easy to play a naive character as being simple, but Wonder Woman and Diana is not a simple character. She's a really complex character with a long history of awesome stories, and I think it's a difficult thing to portray, and Gal Gadot did a really, really good job of it. And likewise, Chris Pine, right? That's his name.
Yeah.
He did great too. That's another role you can ham that up really hardcore, really bad. And he hammed it up sometimes because that's Chris Pine. But he didn't overdo it the way I feel like he could have. Like, if you watch Star Trek, that's him just ham the whole way.
Well, I mean, he's playing Kirk. That's Kirk, right?
Yeah. Kirk is pure ham. You have to.
Well, the thing too, like with. He could have, the writers and director could have made Steve Trevor like a throwaway sidekick character, but he really isn't. Like, he's you care about him as the movie goes on, and you know the thing. I mean, think about like some of the Wonder Woman comics we've read recently. I mean, all around, Wonder Woman Earth One was just not a good comic, but yeah. Even Steve Trevor in that was like. He barely did anything.
He was a plot device.
He was the plot device that got Diana off at Themyscira.
He was the girl in the refrigerator.
Yeah. but in the movie, I mean, he is the reason his arrival in Themyscira alerts Diana to the to the outside world. And she goes with him. But the thing is, like, he is a character who, he's not like, I hate to say this, he's not like arm candy for Diana, you know?
No,
he
not
has
at all.
He has his own story, he has his own background, he has his own troubles that he has to work through.
And he has his own mission, you know? That's entirely separate from hers. Mm-hmm. They happen to coincide a lot of the time, but his goals are independent of hers. He wants to stop a certain part of the war, and she wants to stop this mythical whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the big strengths, because when we read these comics, the Wonder Woman comics, it's interesting because we read The True Amazon, and Jill Thomas just opts to get rid of Steve altogether out of Diana's origin story. And then we read The Legend of Wonder Woman by Renee DeLiz, and that one, he's kind of the war hero. Mm-hmm. But in that one, I do think he comes across as a bit of arm candy. He's useful, but it's kind of like, it's kind of the way, you know, Green Arrow is useful on the JLA. You know, like, okay, there's Superman, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, and then Green Arrow. Like, got it. If we need toys, we'll call Batman. Don't worry. You can be over there and shoot an arrow, you know? And then, yeah, we talked about Earth 1 already, but in this one, I like that they both were complex characters, and they both had their own stories, their own backgrounds, their own history, their own motivations. And neither one had to play backseat to another. And I think when we were talking about the Jill Thomas True Amazon, we were talking about how maybe this is the post-feminist story, because in the feminist, like the original writing of Wonder Woman, he is the arm candy. And so maybe to get back at, like, the fact that it's a reversal is too much of a commentary to be post-feminist. So maybe getting rid of him altogether just makes this not even a thing about feminism. It's just a story about a woman who is going on an adventure. But I think this is even past that, because that, and you have to, in that commentary with Jill Thomas's True Amazon, you have to remove him entirely. And that's not equal. I like this because There's a true equality in the storytelling between the genders, and it's carried through really consistently throughout. In that, like, if Steve wasn't a complex character, then it would have been, oh, this is, you know, feminism, man hating. What I mean, that's not what I believe, but that's what the commentary would have been. And I'm sure there's commentary out there like that anyway. But yeah, you make a very good point that he's not arm candy, and I think you have to do that. I think this is one of the best, like, post feminist good gender stories of Wonder Woman, because they're both there. They're both real people and real characters. It's fantastic.
Well, and like even the side characters or characters who had very minor or relatively minor roles were relevant. Like, they really could have messed up Etta Candy.
Mm-hmm.
She could have been like, I hate to go back to Earth One, but that's just like the best example of a bad Wonder Woman story.
We've read three so far, and two of them were fantastic. So,
yeah. But I thought, you know, maybe to some degree, I think it would have been cooler to see more of her. But I feel like her role in the movie made sense.
Yeah. You know,
and her amount of screen, the amount of screen time she got also made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she is just a secretary. But I'm saying that from a 2017 point of view. In World War One, that was a job that a lot of women had. And she did more than that. I mean, she was the female guide for Diana coming into man's world. She guided them, from afar. The little infiltration team, right?
Yeah, and even when Diana says guard the sword with your life, you believe she would.
Yeah,
but I mean, I want to go back. You said just a secretary.
She takes her job very seriously, and she's good at it.
Yeah, you say just a secretary, but even like in the context of of this point in time, that's a big deal too, because most women weren't out in the world at this point in time. They were just at home wives. So the fact that Edda Canda is even a strong enough woman to put herself out there to have a job and to have a job working for a spy, like, that is a level of badassery that shouldn't go unnoticed. And I think that's why she resonates with Diana so well, and why Diana recognizes, like, everybody I'm seeing in this world are men. And granted, you are a secretary, and that's maybe less than you should be, but that is way more than most of the women are daring to be. Like, that was something I really clung onto in this movie, too. And you're totally right about the side characters. One of my favorite moments was when they're sitting around the campfire near the front, and it's a conversation between Diana and Chief.
Mm-hmm.
And Chief is, and Diana's like, oh, well, who? Chief is like explaining how his people got exterminated. And she's like, well, who did that? Was it these Germans? And he's like, no, it was his people. And like looked over to Steve Trevor like, oh, Diana, you're going to have to realize this world's a lot more complex than you thought. Like, mm-hmm. Steve is a good guy, sure, but his people are not necessarily good people.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made this movie really good for me, is because it has the gender stuff in there that you can't get around with Wonder Woman, but the story is about her eyes opening, like, and her sheltered life on the Mascara and her sheltered upbringing and her want to go off and do good, and Hippolyta knowing that the world is more complex than Diana's ready for, but letting her go anyway, and then watching Diana realize the complexity of the world that she's in all the way up until the end. Like, that was a really awesome journey to watch a character go through. Like, not just that she, like, went and fought monsters, but, like, she went on a journey of awareness. It was great to watch. And it was a nice, tightly written movie, too. For, like, 2 hours, she changed a lot as a character and as a person. It was great.
Yeah. What did you think of the action? Do you think the action was well done?
Dude, when she's going across no man's land from, like, the American trench to the German trench, that, man, yeah, that's fucking epic. That is fantastic. Yeah. And then when they free the town, Jesus. That's,
man, that scene where she's crossing no man's land, that's, like, iconic movie scene, you know? I think people are not going to forget that anytime soon.
Yeah. No way, man. That's going to be... It's going to be buried into, like, this is how you make a superhero action scene, and you make a badass like that. But by the same token, like, that was really moving to watch. But, man, when she was fighting Ares at the end, like, it was a good fight. But there was so much awesome, like, so many awesome things in this movie that are just, you can just sit here and watch it on a surface level and have a really good time watching it. Or you can dig into it with some teeth and get commentary on this, that, and see the character and talk about the plot and all. And it, like, there was almost something disappointing about it all coming down to 5 minutes of punching. You know, like, this was so well written and worked on so many levels, but at the end it all just comes down to punches. And, like, I understand the function of the story in that too. Like, this is what Diana thinks the world is. I just punch Ares to death and then everything's good again. And so she does it, and then she has to realize that everything's not good again. Like, there are still bombs, and there are still bad people. Like, she has to defeat Ares in this way to realize that it's not that simple, and even though she found who he was eventually. But, I don't know, something about it was just like, okay, we're just going to punch and fly really hard, and it's great.
But, you know, and I do agree with you. I mean, it's not, you know... There was a lot more substance to the movie than just punching people out, and I think that's great. And I think it's okay that was the kind of final fight. But I think the story, like, building up to it, was really great. The reveal of who is really Ares was, and up until that point, like, right as it was about to happen, I didn't see that coming. You know, I thought that was a good, well done twist, you know.
I didn't see that at all. The only thing as I was watching the movie, the only thing I was like, oh, that's an error, when she leaves the sword and the dude up on the roof, and then there's a scene where she's like jump back down with it, but you don't see her jump up. It's like, that was like the 1 minute I was like, that's clunky, that was probably a mistake that they fixed in editing. It's the only part about that scene that got me. When you do the reveal. Mm-hmm. Maybe I think the reason the fight was disappointing for me is Ares is just driving home the join me or die kind of thing. And I think they could have tied in better if he'd have been like, you can kill me, but I'll still win. Like, make it like, you're not going to cure the world of war. There's always going to be war. I have won this. Like, whether you kill me or not, there is war on this planet forever now because of me. Like, that would be such a great thing. Like, that's how you could, if I were him, that's how I would try to defeat her morality. Like, good luck. Yeah. Anyway, so you're going to say something.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, balls.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, like, it's just a great movie. Like, I hope that Justice League lives up to this, because I think it would be great to, you know, I want DC to succeed too.
Mm-hmm. I do too, because, I mean, Marvel movies are good, but I feel like there's a Marvel formula, and if there's a competing, like, a competing company with a competing formula, like, they'll, you know, competition breeds creativity. Like,
exactly.
Make them play Marvel off each other.
I mean, Marvel does a good job of occasionally doing something different. I mean,
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Guardians of the Galaxy, Winter Soldier, and Ant-Man, I think, are good examples of where Marvel did something different. But like, both Avengers movies and then Civil War, they were just kind of, you know, they weren't that interesting. I mean, they were interesting, but not that interesting. Not in the same way that, like, Winter Soldier or Guardians of the Galaxy were. But then, like, the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie, I mean, it was a good movie. I really enjoyed it. But it, you know,
it really is just Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah.
Which, it's fine. It's just more of what you love.
And that's fine. And I think they did some excellent stuff with it. Like, the whole, what is the, like, exploration of fatherhood and stuff.
Yeah, the thing with the Ravagers is great, and Ego's a fantastic villain too.
Yeah, I think the movie, you know, some movies are like a sum of their parts, but Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is the opposite, where the individual parts are really good, but when it comes together, it's kind of this very similar to the first movie. And, you know, that's, I'm not saying that is a bad thing. Like I said, I loved the movie.
Yeah, I could watch Guardians of the Galaxy, like, 2 just for Drax.
Yeah, Dave Bautista, you know, you can tell that he loves playing that character.
Yeah, he killed it.
Like, in both movies, but especially his interactions with Mantis.
Yes.
In the second one were so good.
If you're ugly and someone loves you, you know that they love you for you.
Yeah.
And, like, she's so beautiful. No, and I mean, the formula is apparent too. Like, even now, like, I'm seeing the trailers for Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm like, that movie's going to be good. But I already can probably write out the entire plot for you right now.
Well, it's gotten, I mean, it comes out, does it come out on Friday?
Maybe.
The initial reviews for it have been really good.
Yeah, I mean, the Marvel formula works. Like, that's the reason they keep going to it, is because those movies are all really good and they're really fun to watch. And sure, the formula, they all kind of feel the same, but they feel the same because, I mean, comic books all kind of feel the same at a certain level too, and they're pulling so directly from the source material. I'm not like dissing on the movies. I'm sure they're fun to watch, and I'm gonna watch Spider-Man Homecoming, and I'm sure I'm gonna enjoy it, but I can already tell you, like, just watching the trailer, I'm like, I know that movie. I know it.
Yeah.
Not bad, just I know it.
One thing I don't remember where I must have seen a headline or something about it where they like they're basically skipped the origin story in Spider-Man. And I think that's great. We've had it twice already.
Yeah. No need. Everybody knows.
Yeah, we don't need to have it again. I think it's got great cast members. I mean, Michael Keaton.
Yeah, man.
You know what's funny about Michael Keaton? He played Birdman in that Birdman movie, and now he's playing Vulture.
I didn't even pick up on that. That was fantastic.
Yeah. He's playing Birdman again. Just a different bird.
Man, if there's ever a Space Ghost movie. Or no, not Harvey Birdman.
Or, I mean, they could just have, like, a Birdman movie, like...
Yeah, yeah.
I think it would be better if it was Harvey Birdman, though. Not the...
Okay, so you mentioned the JLA movie, and this is something I'm curious about. The construction of the DC cinematic universe, the DCCU, I guess. Because in almost...
I've seen it called the DCEU.
EU?
But I don't know what the... Yeah, DCEU. DC Entertainment Universe? I don't know.
Maybe?
Electronic? It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
Anyways.
In most of the universes, like the animated universe and the comics, the role that we're seeing Diana play in this movie is usually reserved for Superman. The naive, optimistic, believe in the best in everyone kind of hero is usually reserved for Superman. And Diana's usually, she usually plays the part of the hardened, realistic, peaceful warrior. Like, no, Clark, you have to realize people fight. People go to war. Like you can try to wish for the best in someone, but it's always there in them. And I guess this movie kind of gets you there. It shows you where Diana believes that that's coming from. But I think, like, I guess I can kind of work, because this is set back in the war. So by the time we see the Justice League movie, she's lived with this idea that that the war is in men and not in anyone else. That war is in us as humans. And so maybe by the time the Justice League movie comes around and Batman and all them show up, she's gotten to the point where that's part of her core character. But watching this movie, it's like, that's Clark's job, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, Clark is this person. So I'm, and, well, you know, cause in the Man of Steel movies, Clark is totally not that guy.
No. Well, you know what's cool too about the Wonder Woman movie is that when we first meet her, she has no concept of what war really is.
Yeah.
Like, she, you know, we see her, like, training to fight, and she understands, she knows, like, the martial arts and stuff. She doesn't know what war is, and it really affects her
mm-hmm.
When they go to the front lines in the movie, you know, which leads into the no man's land scene. But, and now we can see why, when it comes to the Justice League movies and stuff, will be the worldly warrior, you know, peaceful warrior.
Yeah. Cause I guess in this universe, she's the most experienced of all of them. Right? Cause Clark will have been growing up, cause she's been immortal, right?
But so, she's been in man's world for over 100 years.
Yeah.
Or about 100 years.
Yeah, so since she's come to man's world, Clark landed, Bruce was born.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's been out there as a warrior for longer than Bruce has been alive, for longer than probably Clark has been alive at this point.
The only person that might be close to her in age, but we don't know yet, is maybe Aquaman.
Yeah.
But we don't know yet.
Yeah, and that depends on how they build Aquaman's character. If he's the, like, forever Atlantean king or whatever, yeah. Man, I'm so excited for Jason Momoa as Aquaman. That's, like, the thing I'm most excited about in the Justice League movie is fucking Aquaman.
You know, the thing is, I mean, we've had this discussion before, and we've talked about Aquaman before on the podcast, where he really, I mean, people love to make fun of Aquaman, and, I'm ready for the world to know the Aquaman that you and I know and love.
Yeah. My only fear is that they're going to have the token fight near a lake or something so that you can show how powerful he is when you're near a body of water and then, like, be powerful.
Well,
like,
I'm
worried about it falling into that trope.
The Justice League tie-in Lego sets were spoiled, like the box covers.
Oh, okay.
And there is an Atlantis set where... but it comes with Aquaman, an Atlantean warrior, and a parademon. So we're going to see him fight a parademon underwater, probably.
That's cool. I just, there's the talk to fish be useful near a lake Aquaman, and then there's, like, the waterbender useful everywhere Aquaman, and I really hope we get the latter.
I'm pretty sure that's the Aquaman we're going to get.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get the super strong, you know.
Like the one we get in the At the very least, fights with a fucking trident and is Jason Momoa. That alone is useful.
We get the new the new 52. You know, remember the beginning of the new 52 run on Aquaman?
Yeah.
That was a great portrayal of Aquaman, and I hope we get something like that.
Yeah, that one was really good. You were a fish at the diner and everybody gives him a weird look.
Oh yeah. There's God. Speaking of the Lego set, there's a set that's called the Nightcrawler. Except it's spelled K-N-I-G-H-T. It's a Batman vehicle, and it's like this weird tank thing with legs.
Oh my god, no.
I hope that's not in the movie.
It's just, I don't know, man. I wanna root for DC, but it feels all over the place. There's the animated universe, there's their TV universe that's really good, and this is like something else altogether. Like, man, couldn't you... The kid on the Flash TV show is fantastic at playing Barry. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And the kid in the trailer just seems like a ripoff of that Barry. And I don't know, man. I don't know.
I mean, he might do a great job. We don't know.
He might. I don't know. And I can understand from their point of view wanting to separate the properties. In case the movies go bad, you don't jeopardize the TV shows and vice versa.
Right.
Yeah, and you know when I think Marvel's fantastic, but my wife and I tried to keep up with everything for a while, which meant watching the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show and watching the movies, and it just got to be too fucking much. So I can understand somebody at DC being like, no, we need to silo this a bit more, because we don't want to overwhelm our customer base.
Oh, did you see that Marvel released a trailer for Inhumans?
Yeah, it looks pretty good, too.
Does it, though?
That's the thing, I haven't watched the TV stuff. I think it looks interesting enough.
I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, I think the thing it's missing for me is Medusa being a badass. Because when I think of the humans, I know Black Bolt is super powerful or whatever, and their glorious king. But when I think of the Inhumans, the character I think of first is Medusa. And her, like, sassy version of being a queen and fighting motherfuckers with her hair in a really badass way. And there's, like, the trailer just... She doesn't even say a word.
And her hair doesn't even twitch.
No, it just lays there. And all, like, we see more out of the transporting dog, I don't remember his name, than we do Medusa.
Lockjaw?
Yes, Lockjaw.
I thought that was cool, though. I like the way that Lockjaw teleported. Yes. That was cool.
I like it, too. I just think Medusa should have a bigger role than Lockjaw.
and she might. We don't know
yeah.
yet.
When the actual show, I know, yeah. But I'll watch it. I'm more interested in that than I am S.H.I.E.L.D. Phil Coulson's awesome, but... I watched a couple seasons and I was like, I'm tired of this. I'm good.
Singing is too long to get to LMDs. I didn't finish the first season of that show. I don't know. Just wasn't... Heard it's good. Maybe I'll go back and watch it someday, but not today.
Not today. I'm going to rewatch that Wonder Woman movie again.
Actually, I plan to watch... at least some of season 6 of Game of Thrones again before season 7 starts.
So season 7 is supposed to be the last one, right?
That's what I remember hearing, yeah.
Okay. I might consider, because my big thing was, A, I was tired of all of the gratuitous rape stuff and violence for the sake of violence. Like, I get that it's supposed to portray the like gritty realism of the world, but a lot of times it was just there for shigs. I feel like because they could, and that kind of put me off. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that bugged me was that, like, there's all this interweaving plot stuff and story between the houses, but the overarching construct of the show is that none of that fucking matters. Like, A, there is this woman with a fucking giant army and goddamn dragons to the east, and B, there's fucking White Walkers up zombie shit up to the north. I don't give a shit what's happening between... the kingdoms of whatever the hell in Westeros, because none of that shit's gonna matter in like a year.
Yeah.
You know, so like it's been like 5 seasons of their back and forth, and I don't fucking care about that at all, because it's not gonna matter in the end. So I'd like, maybe I'll just jump in and start watching season 7.
Well, season 6, did you watch season 6 at all?
No, I don't think I did.
So season 6 was actually one of the best seasons.
Alright, maybe I'll give it a try again. It's one of those shows that's hard not to watch because everybody talks about it.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Well, like, people have been talking to me lately about Silicon Valley, and I haven't watched any of that.
Yeah, I feel like that's good too. Especially because we live there.
Yeah, somebody was telling me that they watch it, like somebody who lives here, and they were like, oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's accurate. So, and apparently they made an app in the show that is now a real app, and it's called, like, basically, Brandon was showing it to me the other day, you can take a picture of food with it, and it tells you if the food is a hot dog or not.
That's dumb enough to be a thing. Yeah, I believe it.
But it's funny. So if you do take a picture of a hot dog, but, you know, if it's not a hot dog, it tells you so. Anyways, I don't know what the...
So the other thing we can talk about with Wonder Woman is the take on the character.
We went off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, we did. With the weaponry, I think her sword was a big part of the story. I mean, for obvious reasons that, oh, the sword is the god killer, but not really. She's the god killer. But like looking at like the action figures and the posters, like I have both the posters up in my office, in my work office, and they both feature the sword super prominently. I know it's because it's a key part of the story and all, but that and the shield is really prominent too, and a lot of the merchandise. And I feel like they're really trying to drive home the warrior part of her character, which is great. And that they, oh man, the lasso's awesome too, by the way. The lasso's fantastic. But, a big part, I think, of her is the arming of the warrior. Like, that was something that was really, really fantastic in true Amazon at the end, where she puts on all of the armor and goes out into the world, and you realize that it's all just a weight. Like, the tiara is a crown of thorns and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But here, I like that basically all this armor that she's carrying is a facade. It's the baggage and her naivete that she's carrying around with her. The things that don't really matter and aren't, like, you don't need that shield. You don't need that sword. That's just you not knowing the world and not knowing yourself.
Yeah, totally. I think there was some good symbolism in it. And you know what's great about it, too? It didn't, like, beat anybody. I didn't feel like I was beaten over the head by it.
No, not at all.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the only time I felt beat over the head was the dick jokes in the hot spring that Steve was in when she went to get it. I was like, oh, that's a little forced.
It was pretty short, though, fortunately.
Steve would disagree.
Okay. I accidentally made one.
I think that felt especially forced because then when they're on the boat together, it feels really good. Like when they're on the boat, lying on their backs, looking up the stars and talking about lying down together. Her talking about, oh, I've read all the books on pleasure. And she's like, you wouldn't like them. They basically say you're useless. Like, that was good. And I think I read an interview or something that was all improv with Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. I was like, that's even better.
Very funny.
I love that so much that was all improv. Because that felt really good. And then the cave felt kind of forced. But the cave did give you the good thing with the watch and that coming back again later.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, there's so many good little... we got a babysitter so we can go and watch this movie. And that's like a big thing for us because babysitters ain't cheap. So we essentially paid like 80 or 90 bucks to go see this in the theater. And I'm totally down to see it again when it comes out on Netflix, though. It's probably one of the few I'll buy on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I'm going to buy this one for sure. I didn't buy any of the DC... Okay, I haven't bought any of the DC movies except for Green Lantern. The reason I bought Green Lantern is because when I bought a Blu-ray player, it had just come out, and I had not, and I didn't watch it in the theater.
Okay. That's excusable, then.
But I still haven't watched the entire movie.
You don't need to.
No, like, I watched maybe, like, 3/4 of it, and I just don't care to finish it.
Yeah, no, the ending
actually,
is not...
I might not have it anymore. I might have sold it.
That's not even the Green Lantern who's going to be in this cinematic universe, I bet.
No, he's too busy being Deadpool now.
Yeah. I mean, not even character, like, they're just going to ignore it altogether. Like, yeah, not, they should like just... not even Ryan Reynolds, like, get the same actor, but just, like, it never happened.
Yeah.
Is there a Green Lantern in this Justice League? I don't remember seeing it. I think it's... No, he's not. He's replaced by Cyborg, right?
So the lineup is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, not Green Lantern, Aquaman, and Cyborg, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a Green
Lantern. Well, because, I mean...
Green Lantern's a big character to introduce.
Right. But I think Cyborg kind of replaced Martian Manhunter in the comics.
Yes.
He filled that role. Like where he stayed on the Watchtower and... Not that we're going to have... Maybe we will have the Watchtower, who knows.
Yeah, but like Cyborg is an easy enough character to explain, like... Like, oh, it's a cyborg. Mm-hmm. Like, the origin story is plain and simple. And even Aquaman, people make fun of him, but the origin story is easy. He's the king of Atlantis. Everyone knows what Atlantis is. Maybe not in the context of this, you know, universe, but it's Atlantis. You understand. They're advanced. He's the king. Controls water. Done. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But Green Lantern, like, I have this ring that makes whatever I think, as long as I think and believe in myself hard enough. But the ring is powered by a planet that's ruled by guardians. Like, it gets
to
be... And
there's actually thousands of Green Lanterns.
Yeah, it gets to be real convoluted real fast. And it's you can't shoehorn that into a team movie. And holy shit, I'm looking at it right now, and it says it's 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Oh my god.
Just the movie's going to be 3 hours. And it seems especially... Dude, that seems especially, like... that seems bracing, because how long was Wonder Woman? Wonder Woman felt like it was... I was never bored in Wonder Woman. It felt really
right,
tightly
done. Like, the pacing was so perfect.
I was never bored, never tired. 2 hours, 21 minutes. It's a long movie. Anything over 2 hours nowadays is pretty fairly long movie.
Yeah. No, they did. It was great. Great all around.
The only times I was like, oh, okay, was when the fight scene at the end with Ares, and then when she's like flying off at the end. I was like, okay, we're just going to fly into the sunset. I mean, there were a couple moments like that, I guess, but for the most part, it was like, yeah, never bored, never tired. I never wanted to check my watch, never wanted to check my phone.
You're not allowed to check your phone in the movies, Andy.
Were you disappointed? Because I've heard this sometimes. Were you disappointed when she slept with Steve? My wife was disappointed. Because she felt like it took something away from the dynamic that they had, as respecting each other as warriors of different realms, or that their relationship wasn't sexual, it wasn't that, it didn't have that interplay for so long, and it just kind of suddenly sprang up.
I wouldn't say that I was disappointed, but I don't think it was necessary.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could argue that there is a, that kind of relationship, or at least sexual tension between them in the comics, but I don't think it matters in the movie.
Yeah,
I think maybe that it was just a nod to that, because he dies, you know, so. Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's something to be said about when she does it, too, right? She's riding on a high of liberating the town. She's seeing what the world of man can be like in a time of peace. Like, that's the whole premise to their having sex, is she asks, is this what the world is like when there's no war? And he's like, I guess. I mean, there's never been no war, but sure, babe. Right? But, like, they're riding on a high. They just had a battle. And it's a fantastic night. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like a natural progression of that night and that evening, and not necessarily of their relationship or the tone of the movie. I think maybe that's why it feels weird. Because this movie is heavy on themes, and that moment of peace is that moment of serenity is not something you've gotten in this movie the entire time up until then. But I think it's reflective of her moment of hope. She's willing to open herself up to him. Not like spread her legs, open herself up kind of a way, but like, you know, open herself up as an emotional human being, as a physical person, and have a new experience with him. Because she's also very guarded. She's naive and everything, but she's guarded too. She's definitely, she hides behind her naivete as a shield. So when she does that and she opens up to him, like it has meaning, it has weight in the movie. But I can see the critics who would say that it doesn't necessarily have a place here. I think because, like we mentioned earlier, the two storylines are so balanced and so even, and it feels like, I don't know, maybe it's something we as an audience bring to it, this idea that, oh, he got her. You know, or, I don't know. There's like
Well, I mean, there are people who will see it that way, that he got her. And yeah. I think that's part of the problem is that attitude exists.
Yes.
And it, even if you don't see that interaction in that way, from a personal point of view, I think knowing that this kind of thing happens, that there are people out there that see it that way, will color your reaction to the scene. I don't necessarily feel like I was disappointed in it, but I can definitely see. I definitely agree that it was not an integral part of the story. I think that. Even the, you know, Steve's sacrifice and Diana's reaction to it would still have been just as genuine if they had not had a sexual relationship. Yeah. Because you can love somebody and it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have that kind of relationship with someone to love them deeply.
I think especially Diana would have that reaction because Diana's raised in a warrior society, and if nothing else, her and Steve have been warriors together in a battle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, yeah. You know, like for her, it'd be like losing a sister on the island. You know, it's somebody mm-hmm. that she's been in battle with and fought alongside. And that has a ton of meaning for her, more than it does for him, maybe even. So yeah, it would have been just as genuine of an emotion at the end had they not slept together. You're right.
So, you know, that's my, that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think you'd have to cut. You'd have to cut too much of it being a good night, right? Like when they save the town and then they're dancing, like if it just ends with them dancing.
Could have just ended the scene with, yeah, exactly. Could just ended with them dancing.
Yeah, but then I don't know, then you leave it ambiguous. And is that any better? To leave it ambiguous? Because I would have then just gone under the assumption that they had slept together. My wife was like, maybe they just kissed. Like, no, they kissed and then Lacey gently wafting curtains.
I think they just could have been them dancing and then it just could have been the next day. You didn't have to show them going back up to the hotel room or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think you could do it because I think the way you would show it is like her putting her head on his shoulder or whatever, and to the credit of the movie, like that's something you see all the fucking time, and they didn't do it. Like neither one of them put the head on the other shoulder. They were both individuals mm-hmm. in that dance. That was great.
Yeah.
What was your favorite scene?
I mean, if that's the worst, if that's the biggest fault of the movie, I think the movie did great.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about stuff that we would like. We're trying so hard to find things to talk about that aren't just overflowing, gushing praise because there's so little. So little. It feels like nitpicking.
Well, I think part of the thing, too, is like, I think people didn't have high hopes for the movie only because, or people were at least cautiously optimistic because of the previous things that we've seen from the DC, from Warner Brothers, you know?
Yeah. From DC, and so, then also like on the movie industry side, nobody has faith in a female hero. To the fact that like mm-hmm. I was watching a video and it was recapping like how many Superman movies there have been, not just in theaters, but animated movies, and how many Batman stuff there's been, and how many video games, and like Wonder Woman has said zero video games, zero theatrical releases, and one animated movie that DC made, and it was a really really good one with Nathan Fillion as Steve Trevor.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one.
It was a really good animated movie. It's like, it's one over the last, like, 30 years. One. Mm-hmm. So, from that perspective, too, it's not like Batman. You know you can put out a mediocre Batman movie and it'll make a plenty of money. And it'll be relatively entertaining to watch, usually. But man, nobody knew what a Wonder Woman movie was supposed to feel like. Nobody had any idea what it was going to be. What, you know, how does this look? What is it going to feel like? What are we expecting? It's not like Spider-Man where you've seen it 20 times. You know? Yeah. So, not just, you know, you said the cautious optimism and all that kind of stuff, but just, she's a totally unknown commodity. Even mm-hmm. though she's one of the big three of DC.
I hope this encourages Marvel and DC to do more female-fronted movies. I mean, we're supposed to get they cast a Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
So hopefully that means we will get a Captain Marvel standalone movie at some point.
That's something Feige said in an interview this week or last week. He was like, thank God for Wonder Woman, because we can move forward confidently with Captain Marvel. He's like, this whole idea of women movies not being successful is obviously debunked. Wonder Woman is a fantastic success critically in the box office. Fans love it. Like, everybody loves this movie, so there's no more trepidation about him moving forward with a Captain Marvel movie. He's like, thank God, I'm so happy DC did it and did it well. Because I'm sure he was holding his breath too, like, oh, these DC movies have not been good, and now they're doing a female-led one, and it's just going to tear down Captain Marvel even more. I'm sure he had that pang of like, oh God, don't suck, please.
Yeah.
But that's what we were talking about before. Like, if DC makes good movies and Marvel makes good movies, then they push each other to go further. So because Wonder Woman did well, now Captain Marvel can be braver in its storytelling. And when Captain Marvel gets better, maybe the next Wonder Woman 2 gets better because has to one-up the Captain Marvel. Like, that's what we want. We want them to one-up each other. Because that's what I think has been making the comics so good. Because DC did the new 52 to try and be gritty. Like Ultimates was, I guess. I don't know. But they were too late to the game. And meanwhile, Marvel's just getting more and more fun and more out there and entertaining and letting their creators be a little crazier. So DC was like, fuck it, let's just do Rebirth. Let's just put everything in a big dog pile and let the creators have fun with it. And Rebirth has been a huge success. Like, when Marvel's doing well, it pushes DC to change it up and do better. When DC's now, Marvel's like up in their game too in response. And so,
well, I mean,
like
if you, like, I thought that, you know, you could say that pre-New 52, DC continuity was a mess.
Yeah.
But it was an awesome mess.
Yes. I liked it. I think the 52 universes and all that stuff.
I think that when they did Rebirth, it kind of brought some of that back. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah. And there's somebody who said, like, Marvel, since Disney bought it maybe even a little bit before, they've really been upping their game on minority characters, like Kamala Khan and all the... God, I'm totally blanking now. Kate Bishop has her own comic now. There's a couple LGBT characters that are really popular. Miss America Chavez, a Latino character, is getting her own title these days. Like, and it's pushing DC to go that way too. Like, DC has historically been even less diverse than Marvel was. And now, like, you know, Simon Baz and, what's her name? The other Green Lantern are in the main.
Jessica Cruz.
Yeah, they're in the main Green Lantern book, and Hal's off on his own doing whatever the fuck, but like, They're the Justice League Green Lanterns now. Like, that's not nothing. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to see DC trying to get more diverse too in response.
Yeah, like, when everybody's doing well, it's good for everyone.
Yeah. So let's hope the movies keep going this way. I really hope Justice League doesn't suck.
No, I want it to do well.
It'll be interesting. Either way, they've already said that Patty Jenkins is directing Wonder Woman 2, and then it's greenlit and moving forward. I'm like, yes! If nothing else, we're going to get another good Wonder Woman movie in a couple years. That's all I need. Just keep making Wonder Woman movies, DC. You'll be fine. Alright. We good?
We good.
We good. Alright. Next week, we'll come back with our last episode of the Wonder Woman 75 series. We're going to read Wonder Woman The Lies by Greg Rucka. We were going to do that this week, but Jen was not here, as you could probably tell at this point. Aside from not having watched the movie yet, she's got family in town visiting, so she's not here. So we'll get back to the comic books next week with Wonder Woman, The Lies by Greg Rucka. Until then, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on Future Shows. It's got up past episode 300 on there. And you can click on past shows, listen to the previous 295 episodes. I want to say from where we are right now.
Jeez.
I know, right? If you like this show, if you like any of the previous episodes, if you want to support us, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And if you subscribe for at least a penny, you get access to bonus content that I used to put up once a month, but now I'm kind of just putting up whenever I feel like it. Which I know isn't super motivating, but if you pay a penny, you get access to what's already up there? I don't know. Either way, if you love us, that's the best way to show support. Just throw in a penny. You can rate us on iTunes, too. We don't ask for that much. So yeah, go to iTunes, give us a rating. It helps other people find the show. Yeah, that's it for me.
Yeah?
Cool. All right. Have a good night, David.
Okay. You too.